The Invisible Eye by Erkman Chatrian. When I first started my career as an artist, I took a room in the roof loft of an old house in the Rue des Minnesängers at Nuremberg. I had made my nest in the angle of the roof. The slates served me for walls, and the roof tree for a ceiling. I had to walk over my straw mattress to reach the window, but this window commanded a magnificent view, for it overlooked both city and country beyond. The old second-hand dealer, Tubek, knew the road up to my little den as well as I knew it myself, and was not afraid of climbing the ladder. Every week, his goat's head, surmounted by a rusty wig, pushed up the trap door. His fingers clutched the edge of the floor, and in a noisy tone he cried, "Well, well, Master Christian, have we anything new?" To which I answered, "Come in! Why the deuce don't you come in? I'm just finishing a little landscape and want to have your opinion of it." Then his long, thin spine lengthened itself out until his head touched the roof, and the old fellow laughed silently. I must do justice to Tubek. He never bargained with me. He bought all my pictures at 15 florins apiece, one with the other, and sold them again at 40. He was an honest Jew. This kind of existence was beginning to please me, and I was every day finding in it some new charm when the city of Nuremberg was agitated by a strange and mysterious event. Not far from my garret window, a little to the left, rose the auberge of the Boeuf Gras, an old inn much frequented by the country people. The gable of this auberge was conspicuous for the peculiarity of its form. It was very narrow, sharply pointed, and its edges were cut like the teeth of a saw. Grotesque carvings ornamented the cornices and framework of its windows. But what was most remarkable was that the house which faced it reproduced exactly the same carvings and ornaments. Every detail had been minutely copied, even to the support of the signboard, with its iron volutes and spirals. It must have been said that these two ancient buildings reflected one another, only that behind the inn grew a tall oak, the dark foliage of which served to bring into bold relief the forms of the roof, while the opposite house stood bare against the sky. For the rest, the inn was as noisy and animated as the other house was silent. On the one side was to be seen, going in and coming out, an endless crowd of drinkers, singing, stumbling, cracking their whips. Over the other, solitude reigned. Once or twice a day, the heavy door of the silent house opened to give egress to a little old woman, her back bent into a half circle, her chin long and pointed, her dress clinging to her limbs, an enormous basket under her arm, and one hand tightly clutched upon her chest. This old woman's appearance had struck me more than once. Her little green eyes, her skinny, pinched-up nose, her shawl, dating back 100 years at least, and the smile that wrinkled her cheeks, and the lace of her cap hanging down upon her eyebrows. All this appeared strange, interested me, and made me strongly desire to learn who this old woman was, and what she did in her great, lonely house. I imagined her as passing there an existence devoted to good works and pious meditation. But one day, when I had stopped in the street to look at her, she turned sharply round and darted at me a look.